tables, and saunas. Learn more online at hotspringhottubmn.com.
And you are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you.
Mostly cloudy today with a 40 to 50% chance of showers with highs in the mid-50s up to 60 and east winds 10 to 15, gusting higher. Cloudy tonight with lows near 38. That means possible areas of frost tomorrow morning before 7 a.m. And sunny, though, throughout the day with highs near 65, light northwest winds 5 to 10, and overnight lows tomorrow near 39.
And don't forget, we have our question of the week. What's an ingredient or recipe that's been risky for you to try? You can text us at 218-326-1234.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa will meet President Trump for talks at the White House today amid deteriorating ties between the countries. Kate Bartlett reports from Johannesburg.
D-Day in D.C. was the headline in one local newspaper today. South Africans are watching anxiously as Cyril Ramaphosa meets President Trump, worried it could be a repeat of the Oval Office showdown earlier this year with Ukrainian leader Zelensky. Trump has repeatedly attacked South Africa, falsely accusing Ramaphosa's government of taking land from white farmers. But Ramaphosa was upbeat speaking to reporters in Washington on Tuesday, saying the talks will focus on trade. He is also expected to speak to Trump's South African-born advisor, Elon Musk, about bringing his Starlink satellite service to the country. For NPR News, I'm Kate Bartlett in Johannesburg.
Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem has come under criticism during a Senate Homeland Security Committee hearing yesterday. She was there to discuss her agency's budget, but Noem blundered in one answer. New Hampshire Democratic Senator Maggie Hassan asked Noem to define habeas corpus, a key constitutional right. Noem incorrectly replied.
Habeas corpus is a constitutional right that the president has to be able to remove people from this country
Habeas corpus, that's incorrect. Habeas corpus is the legal principle that requires that the government provide a public reason for detaining and imprisoning people. If not for that protection, the government could simply arrest people, including American citizens, and hold them indefinitely for no reason.
Noem then said she supported habeas corpus, but insisted the president can suspend it whenever he wants. Senator Hassan said not without approval from Congress. The U.S. has imposed more tariffs under the Trump administration, but collecting those tariffs is another matter. As NPR's Emily Fang reports, historically, the U.S. has not done very well at enforcing import taxes.
Matt Lappin is a trade compliance attorney, and he says the way the U.S. has rolled out tariffs inconsistently across countries means there will be more exporters trying to transship. That's the practice of routing goods through a third country facing lower U.S. tariffs to pay less customs duties.
There is going to be more incentive for companies to attempt to skirt the law.
U.S. small businesses say they've been trying to get the U.S. government to enforce existing tariffs and stop exporters from transshipping. But the Department of Justice and agencies like Customs and Border Protection are historically understaffed and under-resourced on trade fraud, meaning potential trade fraud cases worth hundreds of millions of dollars in customs levies go unresolved. Emily Fang, NPR News.
On Wall Street in pre-market trading, Dow futures are down nearly 400 points. It's NPR. Virginia Democratic Congressman Jerry Connolly has died at his home this morning, according to an online statement by his family. He was 75 years old. Connolly disclosed last November he had cancer of the esophagus. And late last month, Connolly announced he would not seek re-election due to the illness. He had stepped down from his role as the top Democrat on the House Oversight Committee. Recently, there's been a surge in sports betting that is powered by artificial intelligence. Tech experts and addiction counselors are concerned. Major online platforms have not spelled out clear rules on AI gambling. NPR's Windsor Johnston reports experts are calling for discussion around online betting and its risks.
Google Trends data shows searches for AI sports predictions have jumped more than 4,000% in recent weeks as TikTok creators share videos of themselves using tools like ChatGPT to pick game winners. Some say they've made thousands of dollars that way, but researchers say those claims are potentially dangerous. Robert P. Shoemaker is a computer science expert at the University of Texas at Tyler.
The rise of misleading marketing, such as influencers promoting untested or exaggerated AI systems, can further erode critical thinking and encourage risky behavior.
With younger users increasingly trusting influencer content, mental health experts warn that AI could give sports bettors a false sense of confidence. Windsor Johnston, NPR News.
Fresh tornadoes broke out across several states yesterday. Tornado damage has been reported in Alabama and in Tennessee. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One with the Capital One Saver Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation at MacFound.org.
Before I took it on the chin, watching a little more of me blow away on the wind. I listened to the whispers, bending out of shape to fit into a picture I didn't even want to take. Like a mockingbird singing a thousand songs that don't belong to me, just to see who's listening. The song of a mockingbird hidden within my palm, the one that's just for me. But if you listen closely and get a little bit lucky, you just might hear my worked myself together, strung a fence across the plains. Tried to tame it all for better, but some wilds you just can't claim. If beauty is in the eye, I'm gonna be mindful where I look. I wanna get a bird's eye from the sky. Every chance I took, like a mockingbird singing a thousand songs that don't belong to me, just to see who's listening. The song of a mockingbird hidden within my palm, the one that's just for me. But if you listen closely and get a little bit lucky, you just might hear my fine. Oh, but it's mine. I know that it's mine. I'm a mockingbird singing a
And that was Larkin Poe from their new album, Bloom. That song was called Mockingbird. Larkin Poe just performed at First Ave last Friday. I know we had quite a few KXE listeners that were down for that show. I got to meet up with Dave Murphy before the show.
Oh, fun.
He was going to that. I was going to a different one.
Okay. I saw them a couple years ago at First Ave, and it was a great show. Super fun to see.
Nice.
Yeah.
And that is Heidi Holton. I'm Andrew DeZingle. It's 8:10, and you're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show. And the 11th Loop the Lake Festival is Saturday, June 21st. Here to talk more about it is Donna Palovec. Welcome to the show, Donna.
Thanks a lot for having me.
So first off, I never really, like, I've always known about Loop the Lake, but I never learned how it got started. And because you've been there since the beginning, correct?
Correct.
So how did Loop the Lake get started?
Well, initially, a group, Bike Bemidji, was trying to come up with an event to support an application as a community, a bicycle-friendly community with the League of American Cyclists. And so we needed an event to support that application, and that's how it really began in 2014.
Excellent. So where does the route go for Loop the Lake?
Well, we do have a lake called Lake Bemidji, and that is what we loop, and we start at the South Shore beach area, and then we take the trail, and we head across the south end of the lake, and we go over to Paul Bunyan Park, and then down Lake Avenue, through campus to Diamond Point, and go up Birchmont, and then we come back on the busy Bemidji Avenue curve where we have a safety crew. And then we have we have a stop in Diamond Point for mechanical help and also for some bananas or water if they need some refreshment. It's kind of like an eat along the way course. And the next stop is at Rutgers where our riders can also get mechanical help, medical help. We also have muffins and coffee and juice available in the lodge for them. And, of course, we always have Port-a-Johns ready for a rest stop. You know, those are needed. And from there, then, the group takes off on, County 20, I think it is. We get actually a lane closed off.
Oh, wow.
Because we have over 1,000. We had over 1,000 riders last year. But then they go to the state park. And, you know, the one thing that's really nice is at Rutgers and the state park and also at the start and finish, we have local musicians. And so people can take, you know, the stop as long as they want to. And at the state park, they can really fill up on grilled hot dogs and watermelon and chips and cookies. And we even have gluten-free offerings. And then they head back on the trail on the east side of the lake, and they get one more stop at Whitetail, where, again, if they haven't had enough to eat, they can have more. And then they finish up at South Shore Beach, and they can have music when they arrive back there and even more food.
Excellent.
So Loop the Lake is not a race, I'm guessing, from what we heard here on all the things where you can stop and enjoy the scenery.
You know, we're really proud of the fact that we aren't a race, and so we're very inclusive. And in fact, we had an inquiry from an 81-year-old just the other day on our website asking some questions about it. And the other thing that's nice is we don't do this as a fundraiser. This is really a community celebration, and I would say that's how it's really evolved, is a community celebration of our area, a chance for people to be physically active and very inclusive in our age range. And in fact, we often have riders who bring a cart with their dog.
So how does that feel for you from being there from the beginning and last year having over 1,000 people show up? Was that kind of what you had envisioned? Did you ever think it would get to 1,000 people?
Yeah, you know, the first year we had about 300. And I think as we've increased in numbers, the whole entire event has evolved really in many ways to include many more people. One of the roles I've taken on is volunteer coordinator, and we currently have about 90 volunteers already lined up for the event, and probably 10 or 15 more slots available where we could use help. But I think that's one area. When your event grows, then you need more people to support their safety, their enjoyment, you know, their fun along the way.
So what kind of positions do you need filled for volunteers?
Well, right now, we could use a little bit of help at Rutgers because we have volunteers who guide the riders from the driveway to go around the circle toward the lodge and be able to park so we're not interfering with other guests at Rutgers. And so I could use, you know, two or three people there. In fact, if two people wanted to get together, that'd be great because I could use them at Rutgers. And then we have some needs around the South Shore Beach area, the finish arch. We like to have some people cheering the riders on. And just yesterday I was talking about the fact that maybe we need cowbells because then we can really make it a finish, especially for the kids, you know, mm-hmm. to let them do that. And some help with like the start arch. We do some monitoring around the bridge by the beach house to make sure people are walking their bikes. So it's, you know, it's really kind of just helping us manage the people. No skills required.
So, Donna, we just had a question from a listener who's a bike fanatic in the Grand Rapids area. He says, what makes a town qualify, do you think, as a bikeable city? So you mentioned that mission of,
you know,
Loop the Lake.
Yeah, there's, well, that was our initial start with things, and then we really evolved into an event that was more about providing a physical activity for community members and to celebrate our community. But there's many different things that go into the bicycle-friendly community application. I mean, it goes from, like, bike lanes and what the city is doing to promote, you know, the safety of biking. And what events do you have? What kinds of educational opportunities do you provide? So it's a broad piece. It's the application information is on the League of American Cyclists. And, you know, if this person from Grand Rapids would like to look into that, that is free to look at. And we just got our group together and tried to fulfill everything at that time. Once we kind of got through that, then we kind of redirected ourselves a little bit and said, you know what, it's more important to make it a community event that we feel we can emphasize and keep it going.
So how do people sign up if they're interested in being a volunteer?
Well, if they want to be a volunteer, they could either contact me, but the easiest way would be to go through the Bike Bemidji website. So it's www.bikebemidji.com. And on that website, there's a place for them to ask a question or to go to a link that will then be picked up by one of our committee members. And that committee member will give me the information, and then I will contact the potential volunteer.
And how do... Oh, go ahead.
I would say, do volunteers work all day?
You know, the one thing that's been really nice, and I think we've tried to be very amenable to our volunteers as far as what we're asking of them. The typical assignment lasts anywhere from 2 to 4 hours max. And one thing, and I've been a proponent of this, is that we provide the volunteers with a Loop the Lake Festival t-shirt. Not only does that allow us to have people know who the volunteers are, but it's also our way to say, thank you for giving us your time.
And so how do people sign up for being a biker?
Same thing. They'll go to the www.bikebemidji.com, and there they'll find Loop the Lake. And from that, it'll say register. You know, to register, you click on this, and they can register right online. They can, if they'd like to order a t-shirt, you know, a few years ago, well, when we initially started, we included a t-shirt. But one of our main goals has always been to keep this affordable to families. And we received feedback over the years about how important that was. And as a result, we now have registration fees that are rock bottom. I mean, $5 for a child and $10 for an adult through May 31st. And then we left the T-shirt as an extra, but I can tell you that 40% of our riders so far have ordered a T-shirt, and I think they have to be excited about the design this year because we've pulled in the idea that it is summer solstice on the day of our event.
Oh, yes. So how does it, you mentioned like how this has become a community event. You've got over 1,000 bikers, you've got at least 90 volunteers that are willing to participate. How does that feel to have created something that has kind of become a staple for the Bemidji community?
I think everybody on the planning committee would have to say that it's very satisfying to know that you're a part of something special. And I, you know, the reward is really in the compliments that we receive from people, or people who ride for the first time and have never had a chance to experience Loop the Lake, and then they have and they come back. And I'd have to say probably a really good marker of our success is the fact that out of these almost 100 volunteers, many of them come back year after year. And in fact, we have a few volunteers who have been with us all 10 previous events. And it's just amazing. It's kind of, the volunteers are like a family. And if you go to any of the sites where they've worked together and they know each other, you can tell they're having just as much fun as the participants.
Excellent.
That, again, to sign up to do the Loop the Lake or to volunteer, you can go to bikebemidji.com. And that is Donna Palavec. We wish you the best. Now, you need, it's coming up June 21st. You probably want to get those volunteer slots done pretty quickly.
Yep. You know, we're going to have our committee meeting later this afternoon, and I'll put the call out again. And, you know, if I don't get people right away, then I'm going to go back to my volunteers and, hey, you got a friend that wants to join you. And, you know, and I think the one thing that's really important for people to understand is that the best rate to register is between now and the May 31st. That's the date, that's the deadline for ordering a T-shirt, and it's also the deadline for the best price, which is $5 for a child and $10 for an adult.
Excellent. All right, so Loop the Lake going on Saturday, June 21st. Donna, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, and I hope to see you again.
Excellent. Now I'm going to play a tune for you. This is a new one from the band Nation of Language. It's called Inept Apollo. Turn away. That is Nation of Language with the song Inept Apollo. I'm a big fan of Nation of Language. Got to see them back in 2022, I think. And they just announced a new tour. They're going to be playing at First Ave, which is a big step up from where they were when I saw them. They were at the Turf Club.
Oh, cool.
When I saw them. So looking forward to that. Hopefully a new album is coming out soon. We'll find out.
We've got more great music coming up. 9 o'clock, Headwaters with Kari Headland. 1 o'clock today, our volunteer host for On the River is Gina the Knife. And tonight at 7, it's Doug Danger.
We receive support from the First National Bank of Coleraine. Since 1906, serving the needs of the community and working with their friends and neighbors with branches in Coleraine and Grand Rapids. More information at ColeraineBank.com. Member FDIC.
And thanks also to the Move It Real Estate Group, assisting clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. Move to what moves you. More at moveitrealestate.com. Lots of texts coming in about volunteers and favorite volunteers. As we get ready to celebrate our volunteers tomorrow at Kick It with KAXE, we heard from Mike, who says one of his favorite on-air personalities is Michael Goldberg for Stay Human, then Shannon Antela for Green Cheese and On the River, and I think one of the best radio voices in the North Woods, he says, for Shannon. And my trainer mentor, DJ the DJ, you all set the bar high.
We also heard from our very own staff librarian, Tammy Brabowski. I don't know if you realize this, but Tracy Campa, Grand Rapids Area Library Children's Librarian, volunteers her time, giving us all of her wonderful children's book recommendations and book talks for what we're reading. Her insight into children's book and what kids want to read is invaluable. Thank you, Tracy.
Yeah. We heard from Bill from the Afton Home for Wayward Youth. He's a regular on the Green Cheese. He says he's looking forward to coming to volunteer training. He'll be one of the new members of the club, and you can join us as well. It's coming up on June 3rd and 4th. Is that correct?
June 3rd and 4th, correct.
There we go. The 3rd Tuesday night is at KAXE and Wednesday the 4th at KBXE, 5:30 to 7.
We also heard from Dave from Shevlin, running late to work a bit today, so glad I was. Got to hear that whole vinyl cut from Dave Van Ronk. Great selection on this cold, cloudy morning. Made my day. Glad to hear it, Dave. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of that song.
Yeah.
And we also heard from very own David John. Enjoying the morning show. Always nice to hear Dave Van Ronk. Shout out to Jim Gallagher, who spends a lot of time keeping the vault in order and helping with Record Store Day. Also, the first DJ I remember hearing was DJ the DJ. He's always been one of my wife's and my favorite hosts. Also, Christy Miller, who encourages me to volunteer. Pat Miller and DJ Ironsides, Todd Swenson for their shows. John Henningsgaard and all the volunteers. Thank you so much, David John.
Coming up, we'll have local news with the Up North Report. If you love KEXE and work in a business in northern Minnesota, you can also support the station by becoming a business sponsor. Find out more, email sponsors at KEXE.org or call 218-326-1234. Ask for Peggy, Jen, or Chris.
Time now for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. Authorities are investigating what they say is a suspicious death in Bemidji. Larissa Donovan has the details.
According to our release from Bemidji Police Chief Mike Mastin, officers responded to the 1300 block of America Avenue Monday evening to a report of a gas leak. As officers arrived, they reportedly smelled a strong odor near the Courtyard Apartments building and located an adult woman and young child, along with a dead man inside one of the apartments. Law enforcement then worked to evacuate other residents while Bemidji Ambulance attended to victims and Bemidji firefighters worked on the potential leak. Minnesota Energy Resources, the city's natural gas provider, also responded and determined there was not a leak. The man's cause of death remains under investigation. The woman and child found in the apartment with the man were taken to the Sanford Health Hospital for treatment. Larissa Donovan, KAXE News.
Wind gusts reaching 50 miles per hour or more and humidity dropping to 15 to 20% prompted a red flag warning and extreme fire danger conditions on Tuesday in northern Minnesota. Those conditions prompted additional preparation by wildland firefighters battling the large Jenkins Creek and Cookhouse fires. The Eastern Area Incident Management Team says that firefighting crews increased the containment lines of the Camp House fire on Monday to 59%. For the Jenkins Creek fire, which is just 6% contained, more crews were assigned to the western side in the event of flare-ups. On social media, St. Louis County Sheriff Gordon Ramsey detailed at least three small fires that started Tuesday, some sparked by downed power lines in the high winds. They have since been knocked down.
Obviously, these winds are significant and may have an impact on some of the success that we've been having.
About 150 people attended a community meeting about the fires in Aurora on Monday night. Incident management team member Micah Bell explained that the goal is always to get the fire out as quickly as possible.
Sometimes we have to wait for the fire to come to us just because we need to catch it in the right spot. It's not because we're trying to let it burn intentionally in your woods.
Assistant Regional Forestry Manager for the DNR, Matt Wappler, commended local first responders who are fighting fires in their own backyards.
That really wears a lot on you as a firefighter, as a first responder. So I do want to just encourage you, as time goes on, with the emotion of these incidents, make sure you reach out to someone.
More changes to evacuation levels and road closures were announced by the St. Louis County Sheriff's Office on Monday. Go to KAXC.org for more information. A narrowly divided legislature adjourned Monday without completing a state budget for the next 2 years, ending the session just as it began, with rancorous finger-pointing. The Minnesota Reformer reports the biggest budget bills are still outstanding, including health and human services, education, and taxes. The legislature only passed 9 budget and policy bills out of some 20 in process, meaning a special session will need to occur. Given the Republican refusal to agree to any new tax revenue, lawmakers are looking to trim spending. The date of the special legislative session has yet to be announced, though lawmakers say it ideally would be before Memorial Day. In a series of press conferences, lawmakers laid the blame on each other for failing to finish their work. The state will be obligated to send layoff notices to state employees if there is no budget by June 1st. Minnesota Power is hosting a series of open houses this week where members of the public can learn about the company's proposed 63-mile-long, 345-kilovolt transmission line. The line would run from its Iron Range substation near Grand Rapids to its St. Louis County substation near Hermantown. The project is one in a portfolio of transmission projects approved by the regional grid operator intended to enhance grid reliability. Open houses are scheduled for 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesday in Floodwood, noon to 2 p.m. Thursday in Hermantown, and 5 to 8 p.m. Thursday in Solway. May is Maternal Mental Health Month, and St. Louis County Public Health is highlighting resources available for new and expectant parents who may be struggling. The county has launched a new campaign to remind parents that they are not alone and that help is available. Signs and flyers direct people to a new website, northlandperinatalresources.org. A special Northland March for moms and dads is scheduled for 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Thursday at Alcott Park in Virginia. That's it for the Up North Report from the KAXC News Desk. I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
And that's the Up North Report here on KAXE KBXE People Power Radio. My name is Andrew DeZingle here with Heidi Holton. This is the Wednesday morning show. It might be a little cloudy outside, but it's sunny inside here with our personalities.
Well, now that Jen's here, yes.
Yes.
Franchise. I don't know if I've ever called you that.
I don't think you have. You don't need
to. That's the last time. So we're getting ready for this show on Friday, Ham Radio, yeah. Which you have a part in and yeah. You're helping out with yeah. Amy Thielen. So many people we kind of put out the social media last weekend and people are kind of going nuts on it.
Yeah.
From she said, editors from Food and Wine magazine to, you know, who knows, they loved the title, which was totally her brainchild.
Yeah.
But one of the things, we did some interviews last night with some kids about risky things to try in the kitchen. When your kids were little, I have a feeling, at least Iris, was probably pretty risky.
They were in the kitchen all the time. All the time.
Whether you liked it or not.
Yeah. I mean, that was right. Because we grew most of our food, and so we cooked constantly, and we would can things and freeze things and pickle things and whatever, make our own bread. You know, they just were in it from mm-hmm. the beginning. And I, cooking isn't my first love.
So is everything you make risky?
Everything I make is risky. And my whole family now kind of holds their breath. You know, like, Dave's a great cook. He's a natural. Iris is a great cook. She's a natural. Augie kind of takes after me. Like, it's not instinctual. I can do it. And it turns out...
Do you like it?
No, and they can tell. Like, everyone will get home, and they'll just kind of see the back of my head, and they'll be like, uh-oh, you've been in the kitchen. There are certain things I like. I like to bake, and I like to make soup. Mm. And I keep telling them, like, I will grow it. I will start it, weed it, water it, pick it, chop it.
Wow.
But I just, there's something about putting heat to it that I'm just like, I'm out. I don't want to do that part. And all that said, I cook a lot still.
So with soups, do you use a recipe or do you?
That's my thing. I'm not a recipe person. Dave and Iris are great recipe people.
Okay.
And they can take any recipe that's like, I would be super intimidated to try because it's 4 pages long. And it turns
out... 4 pages?
Yes.
For soup?
No, not for soup. No, that's why I'm out. But there's a New York Times cooking writer, Sam Sifton. Do you know Sam Sifton?
No.
He's a big not a recipe
sure.
guy. And I love that. And it drives Iris and Dave crazy.
That's going to be a topic of one of the shows coming
perfect,
up. The people who do that and the people who don't.
Yes.
I'm somewhere in between, and I make risky choices all the time that often don't work. Like, I'll say, oh, there's... We need onions in this, or we need leeks in this. I'm like, oh, I can just use the red onion I have in the fridge. No prob.
Right.
That one is okay,
yeah.
Between the onions. But leeks provide something very different, I think.
Yes.
But it's when I really start doing that. Because I get it in my head, like, I want to make this tonight. I'm not going to go to the store.
And away you go. Because it sounds to me like you're a non-recipe person at heart.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to follow a recipe.
But I shouldn't be yet. I need to put a couple years into recipes because I'm not that great. You know,
yeah.
I need that background. But I've learned a lot from the recipes I really follow. Now I use that in other things. So.
Yeah, right. And I think that's it. If you can get a solid, you know, base of a few things that you make, then you can kind of improv a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's how my grandma cooked too. And it mm-hmm. was, you know, of course she was a great cook. She made amazing stuff. And then so when I got older and I'd call her and say, how do you make, you know, what's your recipe for this? And she'd be like, well, you just add this until it looks right.
A little pinch. Until it feels right.
Until it looks right.
I can't do that. I know. And I'd be like, so is it a cup or is it a teaspoon? I don't know.
But we'll be talking about that too, good. About especially those church cookbooks from the past.
Oh yeah,
they don't always have all the information
because
they didn't really want to give it away.
Yes, right.
So
they'd set you up to sabotage you.
Yeah,
so it wouldn't turn out like theirs.
So do you have any specific examples of a risky, like what's the thing you're most afraid of?
Phyllo dough.
Phyllo dough.
Oh wow, I buy that.
Well, see, I don't, and
it, which is pretty. It's pretty
I think
good.
I've just
frozen.
Never, I've
I
never
just...
even used the store bought stuff.
Oh okay.
Totally psyched out by it, and I don't know why. I'm not dying to make a lot of recipes with it. Even I just have it in my mind that it's risky.
So I'll throw this question out to you too. So when you're talking about trying new recipes, like where are you finding recipes? Like, are you like searching online of like a specific thing of like what you're craving and then find the first recipe you come across? Like, what's your criteria for a recipe?
Well, this is where I constantly make mistakes too, because I'm sort of in a rush. And so I do look online, but I've learned to like, I need trustworthy sources.
Mm-hmm.
I have a bunch of friends who are very much foodies, and so I have the New York Times cooking app. That's very helpful. Or just the books. Honestly, I'm not saying this because Amy Thielen is the host of Ham Radio, but I use her book. That's where I learned to kind of make a, with her wild rice hot dish, kind of a roux, or mm-hmm. And I use it in lots of other things and kind of change it up a little bit. But basic stuff in there, and it's not too fancy, and it's stuff you can put together.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, internet has been wrong for me, that's for sure.
It's done you wrong.
Yeah, but I recently made I make some crock pot granola and I've used the same recipe, but of course I've changed it up mm-hmm. myself, but mm-hmm. but yeah, it was a good basis, and I kind of knew what I could do more of. Yeah,
with.
That's not that hard of a
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, you looking for recipes, Andrew?
I'm always looking for recipes.
Okay,
maybe I'll become a cook guy.
I think you should.
Yeah. We'll feed you some recipes. How's
yeah,
that?
Right.
Yeah, there we go.
That could be the Wednesday follow-up to the yeah. Ham Radio. What did Andrew try?
Support for this program comes from Sanford Health. With primary care locations in Bemidji and across the upper Midwest, Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more at sanfordhealth.org. And we receive support from the Watermark Arts Center in downtown Bemidji. With exhibits, classes, and handcrafted original art made by regional artists found in their shop 505. The center is accessible and open to the public, watermarkartscenter.org. All right, I'm going to play a tune from our album of the week. The band is Red Barat. The album is called Bhangra Rangila, and this is the title track.
सारे गम मजा झूम मेरे संग चल धूल उड़ा दे ऐसा मूव दिखा दे धूल दुनिया को आज जरा ग्रूव में आते छोड़ दे तू जात पात रंग नस्ल आचरा देखो के दुनिया को देख मेरी जान साफ दिल हो तो जितना भी कर तो वो बार आस पास देखे पड़ता नहीं पर मेरी जान हाँ सब इंसान तो फिर जंग क्या ही बार बार यही तो पुकार मेरे इस संगीत के झूमा चटाल के हाथ में हाथ तो होला सलाम नमस्ते प्रणाम जाओ अलोहा स्वाति शलाम स्काई इज द लिमिट झूले आसमान पर वास कर भूल के तू दुनिया के ठाम
And that was from our album of the week. That band is Red Barat. That album is called Bhangra Rangila, and that was the title track. Red Barat is based out of Brooklyn, New York, led by Sonny Jain, an Indian-American drummer and Indo-jazz composer. Let us know what you think of the album of the week. Text us at 218-326-1234. Coming up next is Area Voices. Vehicle donations to KXE are tax-deductible. Donate a car, truck, boat, or other vehicles, and we'll provide you with free pickup and the tax documents regarding your donation. Call 855-277-2346 or give online at kaxe.org. And support comes from Timberlake Lodge in Grand Rapids, offering an endless soup and salad bar for lunch and burgers and hand-cut steaks for dinner. More at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com.
Mostly cloudy today, 40 to 50% chance of showers, highs 54 to 60 degrees. Don't forget, kick it with KXE tomorrow night in Grand Rapids at Rapids Brewing.
Now for Area Voices. My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I'm the producer of Area Voices. Today I'm talking with a student from Warren Alvarado Oslo named Mercedes Shea, who was part of the Visual Arts State Festival and won not one, but three spotlights on the arts for her artwork. Her art teacher, Nicholas Engfer, also joins us today as we talk about the process of being part of Visual Arts State Festival and Mercedes' history with art.
So my name is Nick Engfer. I am the art teacher in Warren Alvarado, Oslo, Minnesota.
And I'm Mercedes Shea, and I'm a senior at Warren Alvarado, Oslo High School.
So first off, what is Spotlight on the Arts?
So the Spotlight on the Arts Award is recognizing individuals who place at the highest level in their category for the section in the state that they're competing in. So once a year, we compete in War Road, Minnesota, and those judges then take the number one of, let's say, painting or sculpture. That one person is the spotlight for the state, and then they get to move on and go to the Twin Cities Perpich Center for the Arts and show off their artwork there.
So, Mercedes, you had three pieces that were given the Spotlight on the Arts Award. Maybe first off, let's describe what were the three pieces.
Well, I made a sculpture of Audrey 2 from the movie Little Shop of Horrors, and I made a angel sculpture, which is just a woman's body with angel wings on it, and then I made a giant crocheted octopus. So, yeah, those are the three things that I made.
So were you able to, you're able to enter more, because there's 10 categories, I believe, correct, that of different art forms? So are you able to do more than one in each category, or were they all in separate categories?
Yeah, they were all in separate categories, but you can do like multiple of the same thing. It's just you have an amount of entries in each category that you can bring.
Okay. So what is that process like in participating? Like, how'd you go about deciding what pieces to submit? Like, how does the whole process work? Because I'm not very familiar with this whole system.
Yeah, so at the middle of the year, roughly, students need to decide maybe what is their masterpiece art going to be? What is the one piece that they're going to decide I want to keep working on? And Mercedes was lucky enough to be in multiple of my classes, and I guess she decided, I want to make this angel and 3D design it, cut it out, shape it out of plywood, make the wings. You know, it was the process, I guess, happens over months where you have to come up with the idea first and then kind of work backwards and go, okay, well, now that I know all the steps, is it attainable to get this done before the end of the year? Realistically, I try to tell Mercedes and other students that they only have a certain amount of hours really to work on the sculpture unless they bring it home. So, and then as far as other pieces, like what is your process at home when you're crocheting at home? How do you decide like what to actually do?
Yeah, it's, you just like plan out how much time you really have to work on things. It's like, how can I go above and beyond other people's like things, and how can I be unique and make something that they've never seen that before?
I think that's a big approach for her is she, I mean, the amazing thing is that she placed with three spotlights. Usually a student only ever gets one in their whole, you know, high school career, one per year. And so with her going in knowing, hey, I want to challenge myself to do a sculpture, a ceramic piece, a folk art piece, and I think you brought, oh, and she brought a stained glass piece as well. So just spacing her abilities out was the thing, I guess, the approach she went for is, yeah, she knew how to do it all. She just couldn't, you know, that's where my job is, just to guide.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was that like for you, Mercedes, to find out that you had three pieces that got spotlight on the Arts Award?
Well, I, you know, tears a little bit. I was really surprised. Like, I couldn't believe it, you know, but it's kind of like all my pieces were very different from each other. So I was kind of like, okay, well, it's understandable a little bit because, like, oh, my art style is very different for each one. So didn't seem like I made all of them. People were surprised that all three of them were by me. But no, I was very shocked. Like, I didn't even know what to say when I heard that. I was so surprised.
And so there was also kind of a showcase of the art. Did you get a chance to go down for that?
Yes, I did.
So what was that? What was that like?
Well, everyone that in each district that got spotlights, they all come together and bring their art there, and it's displayed on a bunch of tables and they're all hung on the wall so people can come and view it all. They can look at everything that everyone else got spotlights on. So you can just look at what everybody else did and what categories from each other competition that won at other schools.
And how is it for you as a teacher to, like you said, it's rare for a student to have more than one award, to have one of your students get three awards. What was that like for you as a teacher?
In every job, you doubt yourself. You go home, you think about the bad days or the hard days. And I think these are the days that I'm like, wow, I really do a great job at my, like, I'm doing a good job at my job. So I kind of give myself a pat on the back and then think about, all right, what could I have done differently to help other students have this opportunity, or how attainable is it to split my time? Because like Mercedes was saying, she's been very committed outside of the classroom too. She's bringing things home. She's working on it at home. And then just the sculpture part of it too, or the different projects that Mercedes wanted to do, were difficult. Mercedes was learning how to use bandsaws, die grinders, like heavy equipment tools to make this large angel sculpture. And for me as a teacher, I was very proud of her just because, you know, spend 6 months, mm-hmm. you know, I think her hand got tired of just basically a grinder and grinding away wood chips and having to wear a mask.
So Mercedes, let's go back a little bit. Has art always been a main interest of yours?
Not when I was younger. I mean, like I crafted a lot when I was younger, like used craft foam and like felt, and I used a hot glue gun, and I made stuff all the time when I was a kid. Like I made like houses and stuff for my toys. And I loved doing that when I was a kid, but I never had the opportunity in school really, because it was more like painting and drawing. And I just was never my thing. So when I saw that there was a ceramics class, I was like, I want to take that. I love making 3D things. That's way more my interest. So then that's when I realized that I love, you know, ceramics and making different things, and having that opportunity from Mr. Inkfer is like, I got to try out more things and I learned how much I loved doing that stuff.
And that's spot on with, you mean, like you asked, when you're a teacher and your students really show an interest in what you teach, that's all you can really ask for.
Yeah. And I think that goes along to what you're saying is, like, a lot of the early art classes, it's painting and drawing, but like there's so many different art forms available. So that's awesome that you were able to find the art form that was calling to you and able to not only pursue it, but excel at it. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So you're a senior now. Are you going to keep creating art? Is that the future goals?
I hope so. I definitely want to keep crocheting. And like when there's like vendors that come up where I can go and sell things, I would like to continue doing that. But I don't want to make it like a main job or anything, because I know I will lose interest in it if I know I have to do it. But I definitely think that's definitely a hobby that I'm going to keep for the rest of my life. And I really enjoy doing that and creating things, for sure.
She wants to own a business one day. right now she has worked at a a restaurant steak place for a couple of years. And on the way down and back from the Twin Cities, we were talking a lot about it. And she's got a lot of cool ideas. I think she could make her own business, her own vibe with her art. She could combine it all. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talk about how you felt the last 3 years to like all the hard work you've done. I mean, imagine you're not in sports, mm-hmm. and this is through the Minnesota State High School League, and you're getting recognized just like somebody who competes in a sport. Like, how does that make you feel?
I definitely feel really proud of myself, and it makes me want to keep making more things. So I definitely encourage other people to push yourself and, you know, work hard, make something really cool. And then you have that chance to, you know, get people to see the things that you've done. It's a really cool opportunity that I have never seen before. And it's like, I just feel so honored, you know, for people to come up to me like strangers, and they come up to me and tell me, oh, this is so cool. Like, I loved seeing this. And it's really cool to know that people enjoy seeing your art.
And the opportunity in itself is so giving to the students. Like, the thing that obviously as any artist would say is there is no spectrum. Like, it's so wide. So any student that has an interest like Mercedes has a spot. And as a high school teacher, you want that. You want every student to have the something to fit in, some place to fit in the school, and to be able to have usually around 9 to 8 students that will submit 1 to 2 pieces. That's a good chunk of our school. Like, I feel like I'm covering at least, you know, 8 students that maybe aren't in sports, but it gives them a home. It gives them some place to be seen. And I think it's really important that it's happening. I mean, we're excited to see what happens next. Mercedes is so happy with how it went this year that she's wanting to reach out to War Road, and she wants to be a judge next year.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one positive. You got kids wanting to come back and judge other students' arts.
I just think that if you want to, you know, if you're a high school student, especially like freshman, and you have that opportunity to make other art like that, definitely go for it. And, you know, really just do something cool and push yourself, because you have that chance. You know, people will see it and they can see, you know, the ability that you have and the talent that you have that people don't normally see. I definitely think try it, push yourself, make something awesome, and people will enjoy it.
Yeah, and I would agree absolutely that there is no limitations. Push yourself, and art in everything. There is art in every single job. One of the things with art is seeing it, with podcasting, with radio stations. Everything has art in it, and if you appreciate art, it helps you appreciate life a little bit more. Mm-hmm.
Mercedes Shea and Nicholas Engfer have been my guests today. Area Voices is made possible by the Minnesota